ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 4, Chapter 24, Text 26. Satan prapannarthi haro. Satan prapannarthi haro. Bhagavan dharma vatsalaha. Bhagavan dharma vatsalaha. धर्म ज्ञान शील संपन्नान धर्म ज्ञान शील संपन्नान प्रीता प्रीतान उवाचः प्रीता प्रीतान उवाचः वर्ड फॉर वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन सा लॉर्ड शिवा तान देम प्रपन्न आरती हराह वन हु ड्राइव्स अवे ऑल काइंड्स ऑफ डेंजर भगवान द लॉर्ड धर्म वत्सलहा वेरी मच फॉन्ड ऑफ रिलीजियस प्रिंसिपल्स धर्म ज्ञान पर्सन्स हु आर अवेयर ऑफ रिलीजियस प्रिंसिपल्स Shila Sampannan, very well behaved. Pritaha, being pleased. Pritan, of very gentle behavior. Uvacha, talked with them. Ha, in the past. Translation, Lord Shiva became very pleased with the Prachetas because generally Lord Shiva is a protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princes, he began to speak as follows. Purport by His Divine Guest Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu or Krishna is known as Bhakta Vatsala, and herein we find Lord Shiva described as Dharma Vatsala. Of course, the word Dharma Vatsala refers to a person who lives according to religious principles. That is understood. Nonetheless, these two words have additional significance. Sometimes Lord Shiva has to deal with persons who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. Such persons are not always very much religious and pious in their activities, but since they worship Lord Shiva for some material profit, they sometimes obey the religious principles. As soon as Lord Shiva sees that his devotees are following religious principles, he blesses them. The Prachetas, sons of Prachin Barhi, were naturally very pious and gentle, and consequently, Lord Shiva was immediately pleased with them. Lord Shiva could understand that the princes were sons of Vaishnavas, and as such, Lord Shiva offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as follows. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So the translation is, Lord Shiva became very pleased with the Prachetas because generally Lord Shiva is the protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princes, he began to speak as follows. So we see that in this whole pastime, initially it was Maharaj Prithu, and then briefly his descendants were described, and then now there is more emphasis on these Prachetas. And in the verses coming up to this particular verse, there is a description how the Prachetas, they have decided to go to perform austerities because that was the instruction by their father, King Prachinbarhi. So when they're on their way, they see a beautiful lake, and there's a description of the lake, that the lake is so beautiful that there are such nice birds chirping around. It's extremely peaceful. It's blissful around that place. And there are so many lotuses growing in that lake. And then, who appears? Lord Shiva happens to be there. Now, although from the previous verses, it seems like a coincidence that Prachetas have reached this place, which is very beautiful, and it is described that the lake is so peaceful, it is like the mind of a saint. And then suddenly Lord Shiva appears there with his associates, he's coming out of the lake. But in the next few verses, we'll come to know that Lord Shiva has actually intentionally come to meet the Prachetas. So it is mentioned here, Srila Prabhupada describes that when we are pious, when we have piety in us, then we automatically attract the blessings of the Vaishnavas. You see, Prachetas were not performing any austerities, or they were not desiring to meet Lord Shiva. Yet, they ended up meeting him because they were extremely pious and gentle devotees. And at this stage, they were not complete devotees because their father's instruction was to perform austerities so that they can become capable of creating progeny. You see, who was King Prachinbarhi? He is, as mentioned in the verses before, that he is extremely perfect at Karmakanda rituals. So there are scriptures in the Vedas that actually empower you if you follow the, if you do the yajñas, if you follow the injunctions and the rules and regulations, if you give charity, as mentioned in the scriptures. What do you get? You can get opulence, as much opulence as you want. You can gain victory over your enemies. You can gain physical strength. You can gain a big kingdom. So these kind of injunctions are mentioned in the scriptures, and if you follow them, you can attain all these material opulences. So King Prachinbarhi, it is mentioned, was perfect at these Karmakanda activities. He was very to the point, and he could follow the scriptural injunctions perfectly. And because he was good at that, he was one of the Prajapatis. Just like Swayambhuva Manu and Daksha, he was considered one of the Prajapatis. And then he was given the responsibility of creating progeny. So in that manner, he also then engaged his sons to do so. And because his sons were very submissive and obedient, so they listened to the father. And then Lord Shiva here, he understands that they're a perfect ground. They have perfect consciousness to be given bhakti, to be taken to a higher level. You see, because when we are only performing austerities or giving charity for material gains, then yes, we are pious. We're living a pious life. And then the next birth, we will again take birth in a very pious situation. And we will have a pious life. But we are still stuck in this cycle of birth and death. We are not able to come out of this cycle of birth and death, even if we have piety. So we have to take this piety to the next level, to the level of bhakti. So Lord Shiva is actually trying to give them that. And Lord Shiva has actually specially appeared before them because he knows that he has that consciousness where they can take it up. And Lord Shiva doesn't, as Prabhupada mentions, he doesn't appear in front of everyone, in front of mere mortals. We can't see Lord Shiva. But here, he is himself coming and presenting himself in front of these Prachetas. And like Yamuna Lila Mataji mentioned in yesterday's class, that Bhasmasur was actually performing severe sacrifices. What was he sacrificing? He was chopping off the limbs of his body and offering it to Lord Shiva. You see how it's a sacrifice in mode of ignorance. You're chopping off your body parts and offering to Lord Shiva. But yet Lord Shiva didn't reject that. He appeared before he was about to chop off his head. So when he still granted the boon he wanted. So that way Lord Shiva is very merciful even to such devotees of his. Then what to talk of people who have consciousness like Prachetas. But then we have to understand that piety just in itself is not an end. It's a means to an end. The end being pure devotional service. And Rupa Goswami also mentions in Nectar of Instruction, Niyamagraha, following rules and regulations just for the sake of following them is not going to give you any benefit. You follow the rules because they are conducive to our spiritual progress. So talking of piety, once Srila Prabhupada, when he was in the West and he had just started preaching, he had just arrived there in 1965, 66. So the followers at that time, they were still very new, and then they heard from Bhagavad Gita that you have to have some quota of piety to be able to become devotees. So then they asked Prabhupada, how is it possible that we became devotees? Because we were very degraded, we are living a very lowly life. So he actually says to them, he said, I have created your piety, so you don't worry, you just engage in devotion. So you see, it is mentioned that books are the basis, preaching is the essence, and purity is the force. So such was the great force, divine force of Srila Prabhupada's preaching that outwent all the degraded consciousness, and in came all the four regulative principles. So his disciples, who were at completely in mode of ignorance, not even mode of passion, they could come to the mode of goodness, they could follow the four regulative principles. And Prabhupada mentions in Prabhupada Lila Amrit that these four regulative principles are just the bare minimum. They bring you to a level of civility. You see, if you're not even following these four principles, then you can't even be considered a human being. You see, these are the basics of living like a human being. And in this way, he explained to them that piety will be created. You just engage in devotion. He assured them. And then Srila Prabhupada was very pure and gentle, we know. And then in Bhaktivedanta manner, when he was preaching in London, in Bhaktivedanta manner, once after very nice ecstatic chanting and kirtan, and he was leading the kirtan, and then he mentioned to the devotees, he said, did you see Lord Shiva and Narad Muni were here? And the devotees were surprised to hear that. And he said, yes, they were here. They were here to hear the chanting and the kirtan. So you see, all these people in the world who have material desires, they are trying to attract the attention of the demigods. But the demigods are attracted towards Prabhupada. You see, because he is engaged in something that is even enlivening to them. Whereas when people in general are worshipping them for their materialistic desires, it is still a materialistic reason that their devotees are worshipping them. But what Prabhupada is engaged in is the most enlivening activity, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And even the demigods become attracted towards that. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes on two more words, Dharma Vatsala and Bhakta Vatsala. So Dharma Vatsala is what I just described, that following the injunctions, the rules and regulations, is you following the path of Dharma. So, those who follow the path of Dharma are the Karmis. And Srila Prabhupada mentions also in Upadesha Amrita that they are better than Vikarmis, those who completely reject the religious principles mentioned in the scriptures, and they just want to pursue sense gratification ruthlessly. So they're called the Vikarmis. And that is demoniac life, because you completely reject all the rules and regulations of the scriptures. You just want to pursue your sense gratification without any consideration to others. And then better than them are the Karmis, who are engaged in fruitive activities, but they at least want to follow the injunctions in the scriptures. So they're God-fearing. They understand that if they did a particular activity which was sinful, there'll be reactions. So they refrain from those, and they do those activities which they think will bring piety or good reactions. But we see in many pastimes in Bhagavatam that Lord Krishna himself is not too much towards being a dharma vatsala person. He is a bhakta vatsal god. Yes, he is bhakta vatsal. He becomes subjugated by the love of his devotees. And this specifically comes out in his pastime of the yagnik brahmanas. So the yagnik brahmanas they had accumulated huge amount of bhoga and all other paraphernalia that they needed to do yagya for the Lord, to do worship to the Lord. And Krishna was nearby, he and his cowherd friends, they were playing in the forest. And then the cowherd boys tell him that they are hungry. So so Krishna tells them, okay, nearby is a big yagya happening. Let's go there, they have immense bhoga, and let's ask them, they'll give us some, and then we can have that. So the Gopa boys, they go to the yagnik brahmanas, and they request that Krishna and all of us are hungry, can you please give us some bhoga? And the brahmana said, what are these little kids here for? We are doing great sacrifices for the pleasure of the Lord, and these little kids are just coming here for some bhoga, and they're distracting our, yagya, and all. They just says, no, you can't have that. You just, and so they ignore the Gopa boys. So the cowherd boys, they go back to Krishna, and then Krishna says, okay, let's go to their wives. Maybe they will give us something. So the cowherd boys then go to the wives of the brahmanas. And the wives of the brahmanas had heard about Krishna. And they were very attracted towards Krishna. And now when they came to know that Krishna was just in the neighborhood and he was playing and he was hungry, so they immediately gathered whatever paraphernalia they could carry, the bhoga that they could carry, and they took all that to Krishna. And Krishna was very pleased. So you see how Krishna was pleased with them, because their love for the Lord was spontaneous. They saw that the Lord is there and he needs bhoga, and they did not take permission from their husband. Ideally, they should have taken permission from their husbands to go out and then also take permission to even take all that bhoga that they needed for the yagyas. So the wives just disappeared with that. And then Krishna asks them, this is why have you come here? And they say, we have come to give you all this bhoga because you were hungry, so we want to feed you. So they very lovingly give it to them, and he says, okay, now you should go back home. And they say, Krishna, we have not come here to go back home, because our husbands now will be very upset with us. For one, we didn't take their permission to come. Secondly, we even took all the bhoga that they needed for the yagya. So they will be more upset. But somehow he consoles them and he sends them back. But in this way, he's establishing the principle that bhakti is higher than dharma, the duty or the scriptural injunctions. You see, because he says, Vedesh sarve aham veda vedyo. From the Vedas, I am to be understood. So he is the essence of all the Vedas. And then in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, we see when the Lord was little Nimai, he was a little boy, he used to go to the banks of Ganga, and there he used to see some sadhus, some saints. They would be doing some pujas to the Lord. You see, they'll have all the paraphernalia there, and they'll be very strict about their injunction. They won't let anybody come near. They'll proper time, proper place, and the right paraphernalia to be offered. And he would just go and take that away. He will just steal that, or he will just pollute that somehow. And so they would get angry with him. But he would say, don't do that. I am the one, you worship me. Don't worry about this yagya. I'm right here with you. And then also the girls, young teenage girls who would worship Shivling, who would worship Lord Shiva to get good husbands. And he would go and put aside the deity of Lord Shiva, and he would sit there. He said, you better worship me first, because if you don't, then I will curse you that you will get married to old men, very old and useless men. And the girls used to get scared. This is okay, Nimai, we'll first worship you. So they would first offer their worship to him and then worry about anything else. So in this way, Mahaprabhu also established that love for the Lord, spontaneity and love for the Lord, is higher than strictly following the injunctions, which actually can. It is explained that when we become too ritualistic, then we lose the connection to the real purpose, the real reason why we are performing that ritual. We don't understand that it is for the pleasure of the Lord. You see? And And then Lord Krishna also, in Krishna book it is mentioned that when Krishna goes to Mathura, and then when Krishna Balaram have gone there for the first time, then they want to take a tour of the city, they want to visit the city of Mathura. So they go there, to Mathura. So then when they are roaming in the city, they come across a washerman. And that washerman is very, you know, because in that, it's Mathura city, and then everybody's serving Kamsa. So he had these beautiful clothes, which he said, oh, they are meant for Kamsa. And he wouldn't give it to Krishna. He was very strict and arrogant about that. And then Lord Krishna actually killed him and took the clothes. But at the same time, when he went to Kubja also had made some very nice sandalwood paste, and that also was meant for Kamsa. But when Krishna and Balaram came to her, and they said, can we have this paste? She was so full of love and emotions for them, she very lovingly put that paste on their bodies. And Krishna was very pleased with that. So, and then he just, on the chin, he just pushed Kubja up. And Kubja was actually a bent woman, who was very bent. And she turned into a beautiful woman. She could walk straight after that. And even in Mahabharata, there are many incidents where Lord Krishna actually doesn't follow the rules. For example, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna was about to kill Karna, he first hesitated because Krishna said to him that Karna's chariot is now stuck in the ground and he's struggling to get that out. And he's unarmed, and this is the right moment. You should now shoot an arrow at him. And then Arjuna says, I can't do that. The rule is that you can't shoot an arrow. You can't fight with an unarmed warrior. So he is right now unarmed. I cannot. But and you see, Karna had got this curse. It was a curse on him. That's why he had actually accidentally killed a cow, because of which he had the curse that the situation would happen when his chariot got stuck in the ground, in the battlefield. So he was struggling to get that out. And then he also had this curse that at the moment of his life when he will need to remember the mantras the most to shoot arrows, he will actually forget them. So these two curses actually came upon at this point. This was the weakest point of his life. And then that's the time when Arjuna was asked to shoot the arrow. And then Krishna actually also reminds him that Karna didn't follow these rules of the war when he and Duryodhan and so many other got together and they killed little Abhimanyu. See, he was very young, much, much younger than all of these warriors, and yet they didn't hesitate to kill him, and all together they got onto him and they killed him. And also when in the Asat Sabha, in the assembly of the Kurus when Draupadi was robed, they didn't follow any rules. So in this way, then when it was time for Arjuna to kill Karna, then Krishna reminded him, you cannot hesitate now, you must do it, this is the time. So then Srila Prabhupada explains that dharma, what exactly, you see, the dharma in English, it is just translated as duty. So duty means you have duty towards your family, your society, country. But this is a very restricted and incomplete definition of the word dharma. You see, because dharma actually means, dharma is that which does not change. So when we are a small child, one is a child, then our dharma is to study, listen to the parents. When you grow up, your dharma is to get married, have children, look after your wife and children. And then you grow up more, then you grow older, it changes. But dharma is meant to be eternal, something that doesn't change no matter what stage you are of life, and whether you're a man or a woman, or you're old, you're young. And that, Prabhupada explains, is the dharma of the soul. So when we talk of dharma, it means sanatan dharma, eternal. It will remain eternal. And Srila Prabhupada gives that classic example of just like the fire. It is, dharma means an inseparable quality. Just like when you have a fire, you will get light and heat. It is natural. You cannot take away light or heat from fire. So similarly, he says this is the intrinsic nature that we all have within us. So just as fire has this intrinsic nature of giving heat and light, water has this intrinsic nature of making wet. You cannot touch water and expect that you wouldn't get wet. So that comes naturally to water. You see, and then he says, to the soul, it naturally occurs to be a servant and to be the servant of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. But because we become covered over, then we are not serving Krishna, we are serving Maya. We are still serving because that is our intrinsic nature. But because we have become bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, then we are now serving Maya instead of Krishna. So that's how dharma is translated. It is as is mentioned, Jivira Swarupoye Krishnera Nityada. So we are eternal servants of the Lord. That is our original swarup. That is our original spiritual position. And also in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 18, Krishna also mentioned, he says, Sarve Dharmam Paritajya. So he's actually talking about all these material duties that we mostly relate to. He says, you surrender to me and you give up all those external duties that you're so attached to, and you surrender unto me and you give up all protections, and then I will protect you. Yeah, he says, I'll deliver you from all your sins. You do not fear. So that's why when Draupadi was in that, was being disrobed, she was initially trying to protect herself because her husbands wouldn't, and Bhishma wouldn't. She pleaded to all of them, but they didn't protect her. So when she realized she had no other hope, then she took her hands up in the air and she completely focused her mind on Krishna. And there she was. She was protected by the Lord. So that is the kind of surrender the Lord expects from us when he says, Sarve Dharmam Paritajya. Do not rely on any other sources of protection. You see, because as is mentioned in Bhagavatam, they are all our family members, all our relations. They are what? Fallible soldiers. They will all fall down one day. They can't protect us. Nobody can protect us. Only the Lord can protect us. So in this way, Prabhupada has given us this, especially in this verse, he's mentioned how the Lord is Bhaktavatsala. And since today is also the disappearance day of Gauridas Pandit, and Srila Rupa Goswami. So I'll briefly talk about them. And speaking of Gauridas Pandit, he is also another example of how he subjugated the Lord. Gauridas Pandit was a great devotee of Lord Gauranga and Lord Nityananda. And he used to live in Ambika Kalna. His older brother Suryadas had two daughters, Janavi and Vasudha, and they were married to Lord Nityananda. So he was the younger brother of Suryadas, whose daughters are married to Lord Nityananda. So this one time when Lord Gauranga was planning to take sannyas, that time he wanted to visit Gauridas Pandit, because Gauridas Pandit was very dear to him. So before he wanted to take sannyas, he wanted to visit him once. So he went to Ambika Kalna. Lord Gauranga and Nityananda, both of them went together. And they were sitting under a tree outside his house. Now when Gauridas Pandit saw them, he was in great ecstasy. He had never imagined that the Lord will come to meet him, especially to meet him in person. So when they came, he was in great ecstasy. So he cooked very opulent dishes for them. And he got nice garlands for them. And he was, all the time, he was just meditating on them. Like he was looking at them and he was, you know, he couldn't, his ecstasy had no bounds. So then he said, Gaur Nithai, now that you are here, please don't ever go away. I will not be able to survive. Please don't go away. And Gaur Nithai, they're thinking, we just have come to meet you because Gauranga has to take sannyas. And he says, Gauridas, I cannot do that. I have to leave. I have to go take sannyas and then I just came to visit you. He said, no, that's not possible. You cannot go from here. So then Gaur Nithai were in a fix, what to do. So then he suggested, Gauranga said to Gauridas Pandit, he said, what you do is you make two deities similar to us, just exactly like we, Gaur Nithai, you make two deities, and you know that me and my deity are non-different. So we will reside and we will be there with you in the form of those two deities. So you please do that. No, and Gauridas Pandit said, no, just you, I want you. No one else, not your deities, I want you. So he wouldn't listen. So then Gornitai, they went outside. Okay, let's think about what to do this, of how to solve this situation. Then they went outside and they themselves came with another pair of Gornitai. They came with their deities. And four of them were now standing in front of Gauridas Pandit. And then Mahaprabhu said to Gauridas Pandit, Gauridas, you now choose. You want these two or these ones? So then Gauridas Pandit said, oh, the ones who are talking, they are the real Gornitai. I will take them. So he said, okay, you two come inside and the other two, if they want, they can go. So so that's what they did. Gornitai went and stood on the altar and the other two, they went and stood outside. And then after some time that these two had become deities and those two were walking away. And then he said, no, those two are going outside, should come inside and these can go. So then Gornitai outside came inside and they stood on the altar and these two went and walked outside. And he got confused. He said, actually, it doesn't matter which one of you stay and which one of you go. It doesn't matter. So at the end, he realized that the Lord and his deity's form is non-different. It's completely non-different. And then later on when he had these deities in his home, they actually used to talk to him and he used to interact with them. He would cook numerous dishes for them and they would eat that bhoga. They would actually honor that bhoga. And then he would eat the remnants. And then sometimes they would enact pastimes because Gauridas Pandit is none other than Subal Sakha in Krishna Leela. So one time, Mahaprabhu said to Gauridas, Gauridas, do you remember our Krishna Leela? He said, I am Krishna, Nitai is Balaram, and you are Subal. And then suddenly all three of them took the original forms of Krishna, Balaram, and Subal, and they were enacting the cowherd pastimes of Krishna Leela. So in this way, Gauridas Pandit had very enlivening pastimes, and the whole of his life he served these deities of Gornitai. And then when he became old, then Gornitai would often request to him, he said, Gauridas, you are really old and it is a really lot of hard labor for you to cook so many dishes for us. You please make one or two and we'll be satisfied. And Gauridas wouldn't listen. So one day Gornitai said, they just pretended that they are angry with him. They said, oh, we don't want to eat, we are not hungry. So then Gauridas also understood what the issue was and he also said, okay, I am also not hungry, so let three of us not eat and let's just go hungry. So, and then Mahaprabhu smiled and he explained to him, he said, we have been telling you not to cook so many dishes, so you please stop, you cook only a few and we'll be satisfied. And then Gauridas Pandit said, okay, so today you eat and tomorrow we'll look into it, we'll see what to do. But he never stopped. Till the end of his life, he kept cooking numerous dishes for them and they could do nothing about it. So in this way, Gauridas Pandit served these deities of Gornitai who were none other than the actual Gornitai. So you see how the Lord is Bhakta Vatsala. He actually came and lived with his devotee because that's what he desired. You see, that's how enlivening and sweet the Lord's interactions are with his devotees, those who actually are so pure that they can actually capture the Lord. And then Gauridas Pandit had this disciple, Hridayananda. So once Gauridas Pandit, it was the appearance day of Mahaprabhu was approaching. So Gauridas Pandit would usually celebrate it with great opulence and invite all the Vaishnavas in the neighborhood and everybody would come. And so then he, to do that, he would go to his disciples to collect some donations. So this one time he asked Hridayananda to stay and look after the deities while he goes away and gets some donations so that they can have some opulent offerings for the Lord. So he went away and he was gone for a few days. And Hridayananda is very lovingly looking after the Gornitai deities. So it was only 3 days left to the appearance day of the Lord. And Hridayananda got worried that that my Guru Maharaj usually sends out invitations and now there's only 3 days left and the invitations haven't gone out yet. Maybe I should send the invitations. So he personally writes those invitations and he sends out to all the Vaishnavs. And then Gauridas Pandit arrives the same day. So although in his heart he was pleased that Hridayananda has done the right thing and he sent out the invitations, but externally, just to test Hridayananda, he said, "Oh, you are trying to be so independent that without my permission you decided to send out the invitations on your own." So then he sort of was chastising Hridayananda. He said, "Oh, you don't deserve to live here anymore, you just go." So Hridayananda accepted the chastisement, but he did not get upset, and he went and started living on the bank of River Ganga, just at a small distance from where Gauridas Pandit's house was. So then one time, there was this huge, businessman came in a boat, and he gave a lot of donation to Hridayananda. And Hridayananda thought it is best to give it to his Guru Maharaj, so he brings it to Gauridas Pandit. And Gauridas Pandit happily accepts it, and they decide to have a big festival for the Lord. So then they hold, and then Gauridas Pandit says, "Okay, let's hold two festivals. You hold one on the river of near the river Ganga, and I'll hold one at my home." So both the festivals started, and they were going on. And then when the pujari who was serving the Gornitai in Gauridas Pandit's house, he suddenly opened the altar to offer bhoga to the Lord. He saw that Gornitai had disappeared. Where were they? And he told Gauridas Pandit, and Gauridas Pandit just thought for a moment and he reflected, "Okay, I know where they are." He took a stick and he went out chasing Gornitai. He said, "I am going to bring you back." So he goes there and he sees, where are they? They are nicely chanting and dancing in the kirtan that is happening on the banks of River Ganga that Hridayananda is carrying on. So Hridayananda was such a great devotee of the Lord that Gornitai became attracted, and they ran off there, and they are nicely chanting and dancing in the kirtan. And when Gauridas Pandit sees that they are there, so he's coming there with a stick, and Gornitai see that, oh, there he is. So what do? They become scared, and they quickly go and they enter the heart of Hridayananda. And when Gauridas Pandit sees this, he's in ecstasy, he's in great tears. And he embraces Hridayananda and he says, "You are so great that the Lord has taken refuge in your heart. So that's why from today on your name is Hriday Chaitanya." So Hridayananda from then on is called Hriday Chaitanya because the Lord Gornita himself take refuge in his heart. And when Gornita see that, okay, now Gauridas Pandit has calmed down, he's not angry anymore, they come out and then they go back onto the altar in his house. So in this way, Gauridas Pandit lived the whole of his life serving Gornitai and having such enlivening pastimes with him. Okay, so I'll also briefly speak on Sri Rupa Goswami. So we know that Sri Rupa Goswami, he is the leader, considered leader of our sampradaya. And he was the one who got a lot of instructions, personal instructions from Mahaprabhu to again re-enlighten the Krishna consciousness movement. So it is mentioned that without the mercy of Rupa Goswami, we cannot enter into the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And without the mercy or the blessings of Rupa Manjari, because Rupa Goswami is none other than Rupa Manjari in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So without the blessings or the permission of Rupa Manjari, you cannot enter the pastimes of Shri Radha and Krishna. So Rupa Goswami were three brothers. As you know, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami and Anupam. And they were the sons of Kumaradev. And they were Saraswat Brahmanas, and they were from a very opulent family. And then they were forced to become the ministers of the ruler, Nawab Hussain Shah. You see, that was the time when the Mughals had invaded India, and they had gone up to, they started from north and they had gone up to down south. Even up to Orissa, they were ruling the Indian subcontinent. So then Nawab Hussain Shah had actually consulted his astrologer to find out how he can rule properly and how he can be successful as a ruler. So the astrologer had actually told him that in our kingdom, we have these two boys and they're extremely learned and they will be very good administrators. If you hire them and engage them in administrative services in your court, then you will be extremely successful and opulent. So then Hussain Shah actually forced Rupa and Sanatan Goswami to take positions as the chief secretary and as the financial secretary in his government, in his kingdom. So, and because they had to do, and he had threatened, if you don't, then I will harm your families or I will cause some kind of harm to your family. So then they were forced to take those positions. So anyway, they did that. But because they had to do that, then the caste Brahmanas of that time, the ritualistic Brahmanas, they considered them an outcast. And even themselves, they felt that they were working under a Muslim ruler now. What is their situation? They are no more Brahmins or Vaishnavs. They considered themselves extremely lowly. And so they made their headquarters in Ramkeli. So although they were serving the Hussain Shah, they were in the Muslim ruler, their minds were constantly focused on Mahaprabhu. And they were praying to Mahaprabhu, somehow if they can come to him and meet him and serve him, then that will be the perfection of their life. So they were extremely desirous of meeting the Lord. So then Rupa and Sanatan were both ministers. So Rupa decided to go first. So Rupa Goswami, he resigned from his position and he, with his younger brother Anupam, they left. And they went to first to Jessore, which is their hometown, which is their ancestral homes. And because they were looking after the lot of Vaishnavas, whatever wealth they had, they distributed it among all the Vaishnav families who were dependent on them. So they did that. And then they left, Rupa Goswami left 10,000 gold coins for Sanatan Goswami, just in case he needs them. And as we know, he did need them, because after Rupa Goswami had left, and when Sanatan told Hussain Shah that he also wants to leave, then Hussain Shah had become upset and he had imprisoned Sanatan Goswami. And then Sanatan Goswami was able to escape from the prison by giving these 10,000 gold coins. So in this way, Rupa Goswami, he was able to escape first, and then Sanatan Goswami had followed. So when Rupa Goswami came to know that Mahaprabhu is... he has left Puri and he is going to Vrindavan. So he was able to meet Mahaprabhu in Prayag. And we know the famous incident of Dashamved Ghat, where they both had a very nice discussion, and where Mahaprabhu discussed the different levels of bhakti in detail with Rupa Goswami. And he gave him two main instructions. One was to find out the pastimes, the places of pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, different places of pastimes, and re-establish temples there again. Because you see, the Mughal ruler Aurangzeb, when he came to power, he became very envious of the opulence of the Vaishnavs. From his red fort in Delhi, from his palace in Delhi, he wasn't able to see anything except a huge building, which was in Vrindavan. And what was it? It was the Lord's temple there. And what he had done was, he sent his soldiers and destroyed the three floors. Now what we see is only two floors of the temple. So in this way, he destroyed many temples. And that's why a lot of the deities of the Goswamis, and even prior to them, Lord Krishna's grandson had established many temples. So those original deities were moved to Jaipur. So that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had asked Rupa Goswami to find those pastimes, those Leela Sthalis where it all happened, and re-established Vaishnavism. So Rupa Goswami is known as the foremost leader who actually found out those places. But he was actually struggling. Initially he couldn't. So he was once sitting in the forest of Vrindavan and he was lamenting that he can't follow the instructions given to him by Mahaprabhu, and he couldn't find Govindevji, the deity of Govindevji. So this deity was established in a temple by Krishna's grandson himself. Vajranabha had established this deity. And then he couldn't find. So one day he was very morose. He was sitting in the forest and he was wondering how he will do this task, this responsibility given to him by Mahaprabhu. So then this one boy came to him, a cowherd boy, and he says, "Baba, why do you cry? I will tell you something." So he tells him that there is a hill, Gomitala, there's a hill nearby. He said, "You go there, and there is a cow who comes and milk flows unlimitedly out of her udders onto the ground over there. So there must be something special there." So this cowherd boy takes Rupa Goswami to that place. And Rupa Goswami goes there and he actually asks some of the... He sees that after some time there Surabhi cow has come there and milk is flowing from her udders and going down into the ground and goes on and on for some time. So he becomes very mystified with this event when he sees this. So he quickly goes to the villagers and says, "Let's come and dig and see what's it." And not very far from the ground when the villagers were digging, they found the beautiful deity of Govind Devji. So Govind Devji is the deity that is... is the deity of Rupa Goswami, as we know, and it is worshipped, and it was worshipped all lifelong by Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami, the second instruction that was given to him was that he had to write Vaishnava philosophy so that the coming generations could take advantage and understand the Vaishnava philosophy. And Rupa Goswami had written many books. We all know he's written so many books. And while Mahaprabhu was still on the planet, he was thinking of writing two dramas. One on the Lord's Dwarka Leela and one on the Lord's Vrindavan Leela. Not two. Initially he thought he will do them as one. But then Satyabhama, the queen of Lord Krishna, herself came to his dream and said that, "No, you please do them separately, don't do them together." So that's why he wrote two dramas, Vigdha Madhav and Lalita Madhav. He wrote two separate dramas, one on the pastimes of the Lord in Dwarka and another on the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan. So in this way, and then while he was still writing, he happened to show them to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to see his writings at that time. So in this way, he wrote these two, and then so many other. We know that Nectar of Induction, Upadesha Amrita. And Srila Prabhupada describes that Upadesha Amrita is extremely important for us. In the preface, he mentions that for the neophyte devotees, for the beginners, it gives all the guidelines that you need to start your process of devotional service. So in this way, Rupa Goswami has given us all these... different books that we should read. Prabhupada always said we don't read enough, that we should read and then also preach to others. So, and then after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left in 1534, after that Rupa Goswami was considered the main leaders of the Vaishnavas. And he took the responsibility of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition and brought it forward. And then after that, as we know, then Jiva Goswami was the primary leading person who also wrote many books. So I will stop here and see if there are any questions or corrections or comments. Yes, Prabhuji.
You were mentioning about the devotees in Vrindavan and how they were worshipping Lord Shiva.
Yes. This is in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. The ladies at that time were worshipping Lord Shiva. And Nimai said to them, "Look, you have to worship me, otherwise I will curse you to get old men as husbands."
So now my question is that, is there any instances for practicing devotees where we can bend the rules and regulations because of spontaneous attraction to Krishna?
So, okay. So the very fact that we are practicing devotees, that means we are practicing to become devotees. We have not become devotees yet. You see, we are not the our quality of devotion is not that what Mahaprabhu is talking about. You see, our quality of chanting the holy names of the Lord has not come to the level that Mahaprabhu is talking about. So for us, bending rules and regulations means we are following our own mind. We don't want to follow the rules. We want to do the Lord's service, but we want to do it the way we want, you see. And that is not good for our sadhana. That's the thing. Having said that, dharma vatsala, bhakta vatsala is better, and spontaneous love to the Lord is better, we have to make sure, we have to understand that we are not at that level of spontaneous love to the Lord yet. Are we? We are still practicing to become devotees. We are not devotees yet. We have to, Bhurujan Prabhu makes this point very clear, that just because externally we dress up like devotees, we wear dhoti and kurta and tilak and kanthi mala or saris, and that doesn't make us devotees. Externally we have learned to dress up like devotees, but internally there is a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of cleansing to be done, you see. So that's why for us, following rules and regulations is of utmost importance. But not ritualistic rules and regulations, but rules and regulations that help us progress in spiritual life. Right, for example, Prabhupada says we should follow cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, mercy. And if you see, Prabhupada himself wasn't living like a strict Brahmana as per the scriptures. He was living like a Vaishnava, like a devotee. His whole routine was planned according to what preaching program has he to go next. The other day, we recently had last Sunday, I think we had the orientation session for Bhakti Shastri. So all the students who had enrolled or expressed their interest to do Bhakti Shastri, we were having a session, and Anirudh Prabhu was addressing them. So he mentioned this one thing. He said that how it actually started was that a lot of devotees had not read Prabhupada Leelamrit. You see, what is the purpose of reading Prabhupada Leelamrit? So that we can develop love and a connection with Prabhupada, right? The more we know a person, the more we will like him and the more we will follow him. If you still haven't developed enough familiarity, enough affection and reverence towards Prabhupada, why would we follow him? So when you say you're an ISKCON devotee and you don't know Prabhupada, how much will you be able to do? It'll be limited. But that's the point Anirudh Prabhu was making, that if you don't read Prabhupada Leelamrit, then you can't do Bhakti Shastri. That's a prerequisite. So then he asked all the students who were sitting there, all the devotees, that, are you following Chaturmasya Vrat? Some of them said, yes, yes, we're following. He said, forget about the Chaturmasya Vrat and read Leelamrit. Because you will become closer to Prabhupada and you will assist him more in preaching. You see, you will assist him more. Because you have to understand, Prabhuji, Prabhupada Leelamrit is so sweet. And the amount of sacrifices he has made, your head will hang in shame. Really, your head will hang in shame, because we are just enjoying the facilities that he has left behind for us. We are just living in our comfort zones. We are not pushing ourselves out of our comfort zones to do more and more for Prabhupada. So that's the mood. So follow rules and regulations to progress in bhakti. So if that requires you to put aside your Chaturmasya Vrata and read Prabhupada Leelamrit, do that, because time is only 24 hours in the day, you do that. And then Anirudh Prabhu also mentioned where it was the second month of Chaturmasya, where you're not supposed to eat yogurt, and Prabhupada was feeling a lot of heat in his body. And so he asked one of his disciples, give me some yogurt. And he said, oh Prabhupada, it's the second month, you can't have it. And Prabhupada said, oh, you're going to stop me from having yogurt now? And he took it and he had it. You see, because he has to keep himself fit to preach. He was working towards a higher mission, towards a higher goal in life. So yeah, Prabhupada was not a fanatic about rules and regulations, but then at the same time, follow rules and regulations to progress in spiritual life and to preach. That's the purpose. Right? For us, giving up rules and regulations because it's also a rule that you should have read Prabhupada Leelamrit. And if you don't read it, we are spontaneous lovers of Krishna. Why do we need to read Prabhupada Leelamrit? That's not fair. So you see, don't bend and break rules, because we are right now not qualified to bend and break rules. We are not at that level yet. The level that Mahaprabhu is talking about of devotees, of being qualified to call a devotee, we are all not there yet. We are practicing devotees. So we're practicing to become devotees. Does that make it clear, Prabhu? Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Hemant Prabhu.
We can just, it comes to say, when we are in an extreme situation, like, you know, okay, there's a problem with this, and it comes naturally,
So, for that again, I would say you should read Prabhupada Lilamrit. Because when we are reading Lilamrit, we are actually associating with him. And when you're associating with him, you will become compassionate like him. I'll give you an example. Like yesterday, we had huge crowds. You were all there to do Julin. And you saw this massive crowd. And our temple seemed small for the amount of guests we had yesterday and the devotees we had yesterday. So, and what was happening was I was outside, I was watching everybody. We are all supposed to be in a queue. So they were, but nobody was in the queue. They were crowding. They were not queuing, they were crowding. So there was a big crowd of devotees right from the door of the temple up until to the kitchen. That's how much the crowd was, up till the kitchen, okay? So, and then what I saw was I felt that there are so many guests in these lines. So in how do you practice then in Delhi? You have to think, there are so many guests here. Let me not be in the queue, let them take darshan. Maybe this is the first time they have come to the temple. And the impression that they will get today is could be the last impression, because first impression is the last impression. So let them be in the queue for the prasadam. Doesn't matter if you can't get prasadam, let them have prasadam. Because this, who knows, this could be the last time they have come to the temple. So you see, this is how in our daily lives we have to see in every situation, okay, what should I do now? Can I sacrifice something and give it to others? This is preaching, and Prabhupada will be happy if you did that. And sorry to say this, Hemant Prabhu, but mostly what I saw yesterday was the guests were not jumping the queues, the devotees were jumping the queues. Those who are very familiar and they think that they know the temple more, they are regular, they're doing service, so it gives them the right to jump the queues and be in front. That's not. So that's not the mood that Prabhupada would appreciate. You should think, what would Prabhupada think if I did this? Yeah. So that's how we have to practice. Give others a turn. Who knows, this could be the first time or the last time they came here. So you have to be in that preaching mood all the time. And how can you be in that mood? If you read about Prabhupada's life, he made a lot of sacrifices. And even his followers, his disciples, they made a lot of sacrifices for him. They gave up everything. So you will read, Lilamrit mentions about how they also sacrificed their entire lives for them, for him. That will help. That will help you come out of your comfort zone and not just think about yourself all the time. Yeah. And then we can do wonders. These are little things. I mean, devotees can move mountains. But we have to start from these little things and then we can do wonders for Prabhupada. Yeah? Thank you. Any other question or correction? Yes, Krishna? Oh, three questions. Okay, quick, because we're running out of time here. Yes, mind and the senses. The mind and the senses, if they are in control, Prabhupada, that's what he mentions in Upadeshamrita also. He says the mind and the senses has to be in control. Only then you can progress in bhakti. If the mind is completely out of control, like, you know, the hippies were just like drunk and lying on the streets, how can you preach to them? So then slowly and slowly when Prabhupada actually fed them prasadam, they slowly came back to their senses and then, okay, this is what we need to do. Yeah? So the mind and the senses have to be in control, yes. Because well, how can he fight without the chariot? See, some warriors, they fight on chariots. Some are foot soldiers. And some fight on elephants. So they're different. There is art, there is cavalry, and there is, you know, different kinds, different levels. So he was the one who was trained to be on a chariot and fight. So he wanted his chariot to move so that he could fight. Yeah? They just left it because, see, his main eyesore was that he could see that temple from his fort in Delhi. He could see nothing else till Vrindavan. There was nothing else that he could see in the way, but just that one temple. So that temple was making him upset. So he came out of envy. He just told his soldiers to break it. That's why he did just that temple. And of course, other temples also. But when he had done the three floors, he thought he had done enough. So then he left that one alone and then he destroyed other temples also. That's it? Okay. Yes, Dhruva Prabhu.
Now that you have observed that the guests are getting ignored in the queue, as a management, you should make a separate line for the guests and let them go ahead. And as possible, you should have a separate queue for the devotees and a separate queue for the guests and let the guests go ahead.
Prabhu, that can be done. But why can't the devotees learn to give way to the guests? We want to cultivate that mood. You see, instead of separating and, okay, you have this and you have this. No, be together and learn to share. Where is the compassion? Where is the preaching mood? They should. Yesterday they were trying to do it, but by the time they didn't have enough crowd management people and they had more bigger crowds, so it went a bit out of way, but they are more aware now. So Janmashtami is very well planned. You don't have to worry about that. Janmashtami day is taken care of. It is just that these festivals, yesterday they didn't expect such a big crowd, and we had that. So I'm just giving an example. It's not that it's a serious major issue, but it's just an example that can help us understand how in a daily practice we can have that compassionate mood of Prabhupada. Yes, Prabhu. What are the karmic reactions? Well, there can't be any reactions, but you will not get much benefit, you see, isn't it? So I can't remember which pastime, but it's actually said that the Lord actually comes to visit the devotees who are back in the background cooking in the kitchen than those who are sitting here in the front. So they are getting more mercy because they are not watching the Abhishek, they are cooking the Lord's bhoga, or they're cooking for the devotees while the devotees are sitting and watching this. So, yeah, the Lord is very pleased with them. He doesn't forget. He doesn't forget who's where. He knows everything. Yes, Prabhu.
In the Navodaya Bhakti, the 9 processes, we see that there are ultimate authorities or the experts who have, like, Parikshit Maharaj, Parshan. So, what I analyze is that except for Prahlad Maharaj, none of them actually follow the Yuga Dharma, but still attain. Like, for example, the Yuga Dharma for Dwapar Yuga is Archana, but Parikshit Maharaj achieved perfection through Shravana. And the same thing applies to Shukadeva Goswami. And Ritu Maharaj in Satya Yuga, and Archana is reward. So, undoubtedly, this proves that Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. But does it imply to us also to some extent that if we are actually worshipping the Lord from maybe doing daily worship or maybe cooking or something else, that also gives better?
It is, definitely. See, all the 9 processes of devotional service, you can do all of them, some of them, or only one. You will get the benefit. You have to perfect it, though. There has to be a quality to it, you see. Like when we chant, it has to be quality chanting. Then you can chant like Haridas Thakur. If you can chant like that, you don't need to do anything. But can we chant like Haridas Thakur? That's the thing. That's why we engage our mind in other different ways. Yeah. So, yes, Ruji.
Thank you for sharing that. You should not try to jump or take a look at the guests.
Sure. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yes, Krishna?
I have a comment. I also heard in the lecture that this Nawabu sanctuary threatened Rupan Sanatana. So he also said that I'll kill all the cows and I'll stop all the Brahminical culture and I'll destroy all the temples.
That's true. Yeah, he had threatened them because they were hesitant to become ministers in his government, but he threatened them to harm them and the cows and the whole Vaishnava tradition. So then they had to agree to become ministers in his government. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Okay, I think it's time now. So today is the disappearance day of Gauri Das Pandit and Srila Rupa Goswami. So let's sincerely pray to them and get their blessings. So Gauri Das Pandit ji ki jai and Rupa Goswami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.